Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Fairbanks City Council regular work session this Tuesday morning, May 7th. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Pruse?
I'm here.
Mr. Cleaworth?
Here.
Ms. Rogers?
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle let us know she'll be absent working the election today. Ms. Tidwell?
Here.
Mr. Marnie?
I'm here.
And Mr. Ringstad? Here.
Thank you, everyone. Before we get into our quite lengthy items here, this is Municipal Clerks Week from the 5th through the 11th. Now, we have one heck of a clerk. The only time she got me mad is when she didn't win Clerk of the Year last year, but she should have. So I'm going to read a proclamation. And the fun part about it is I'm going to have her sign her own proclamation. It is today. Whereas the Office of Professional Municipal Clerk, a time-honored and vital part of the local government, exists throughout the world, and whereas the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk is the oldest among public servants, and whereas the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk provides a professional link between citizens, the governing bodies, and the agencies of the government at other levels, and whereas the City of Fairbanks acknowledges the exemplary service rendered by our city clerk and the clerk's department, whose commitment to integrity, efficiency, and excellence contributes significantly to the effective functioning of our municipal government. And whereas professional municipal clerks have pledged to be ever mindful of their neutrality and impartiality, rendering equal service to all, whereas throughout their due diligence, expertise, and unwavering commitment to the public service, our municipal clerks uphold the highest standards of professionalism and play pivotal roles in fostering public trust and confidence in our democratic institutions. Whereas the professional municipal clerk serves as information centers, as functions to local government and community. Whereas professional municipal clerks continually strive to improve the administration of the affairs of the office of the professional municipal clerk throughout participation in education programs, seminars, workshops, and annual meetings of their state, provincial, country, county, and international professional organizations. Therefore, I, David Pruse, Mayor of the City of Fairbanks, by authorized and vested in me, do hereby proclaim May 5th through 11th, 2024 as the 55th, and that's not your age, Annual Professional Municipal Clerks Week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Now sign your proclamation. You know, Danny, you're the glue that holds us all together. Thank you very much. You really are. Everyone in this room is in agreement with that.
Thank you.
So, first up is Resolution 5116, a resolution of the City of Fairbanks authorizing an agreement between the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the City of North Pole, and the City of Fairbanks to jointly provide for economic development. We postpone this. Any discussion on it? Thoughts? After a rewrite of sorts. Mr. Clearworth.
Did we get an answer on the taxation part?
No, I have not yet.
I did look into it a little bit, and the statute goes out of its way to say that the borough can expend revenue. It does not say that the borough can raise a levy. I looked all over the state. I didn't see an example where they did. I've looked at the Department of Community Commerce and Economic Development. I always forget that second C. Looked at the statutes and regs. So my assessment of the situation is they cannot. It irks me a little bit that line is on your tax bill. I'm not sure if they're dedicating some property tax to it, and that's why it was there. But it does not appear that they would be able to raise a economic development tax.
Yeah, Mayor, you might remember, I thought there was a dollar amount on that at one time for economic development from the non-area-wide area.
And it could be that it's a, because they do have the authority to expend revenue, so it could be that They raise it through property tax, expend it as a economic development, and are noting that on your tax bill. The borough's code specifically calls out that that line item should be included on the tax bill.
Weird.
This is more written in conjunction with participation with each other in case we do grants, items like that. So the taxation is a area we really didn't look at or consider that much. It hasn't been done in the past except for on a cigarette tax. They put something on borough-wide.
Yeah.
And that goes for their general fund.
Yeah, I'll look into it a little more. I just didn't want that to be a surprise to everybody.
Mr. Clayworth, I trust you inherently. Please take a look at this. We can always postpone this to a later date and redo it.
Well, we can find out by Monday, I'm sure.
Okay.
The other question is actually, again, for you, Mayor. I think that the mayors have always been a part of this committee. And have you been going to those meetings?
What meetings?
Okay.
And the answer is no, if they've had them.
Okay. I mean, I remember going to them for 3 years and wondered about the why I was there, because we did really nothing. You know, we looked at a lot of studies and talked about it. But as far as any action that came out of it, we really didn't do much. That might be changing. I don't know. But if we are to be in a joint effort, I think we need to look a little bit at the makeup of that committee. Yeah, I know that you've appointed a council member, but the mayor, my memory is the mayors are always automatic members of that. I think it's important that if we are a part of that and represent a third of the population, that maybe we have seats come that would represent that.
I'll look into that.
Yeah.
That I will.
And just a note, that one's not coming back before the council until the 20th. So it's not coming back Monday, but the following.
Okay. Okay. So we have, Mr. Clayworth, we have time to work on this. Thank you.
Okay,
going on to the next item. Yes, sorry.
Well, I really don't want to rush into this thing. I think the borough owes us an answer for the stacked on tobacco tax, a resolution that passed. That we need to have more conversation. I know there was a couple of assembly members that reached out, but and maybe it's due to their budget cycle that finally they got their budget done. But I'm not big excitement of jumping into something with them again until we have some answers.
Mr. Marnie, we are in no hurry on this.
Thank you. And plus, I'd like Fedco. I think we should get them involved in this. Crystal, I think we need to hear from Jomo more.
Okay. Okay. Going on to the next item, Ordinance 6278. I'm sorry.
Just add one comment. It's something that we're talking about, some of these underlying reasons why this is over here and this is here and here and here. And we have an organization that has the title of, but isn't necessarily part of, those have a lot of historical reasons of how people have isolated themselves, each other, and others in these types of meetings and gatherings and decision-making groups and so on and so forth. And I think we need to be very well aware of some of the reasons why things are like that before we make assumptions about, let's just say, you mentioned Jomo and Fedco and whatnot. There's a lot of history and a lot of reasons why things kind of just get off to the side after a period of time. If people don't want to personally tackle the difficulties of everybody being together in a similar discussion in the same room. We mentioned the other day when we were talking about people and different groups, and we use the term everyone is everyone, and that's a real difficulty in our relationship activities over the last many decades, is that we haven't always employed that everyone is everyone. We're just now starting to come to, I think, a more comfortable grasping of that we are all in this together and that we all have to work together. And I think that there's a good reason for bringing something, but we also have to have a real good understanding of how we all got to these different points. This thing is a big job.
Mr. Ringstead.
A little bit on Lonnie's comment. With FEDCO, you know, we give them money every year and they go do good things, and now we're sending Crystal over there saying, you go over there and take care of it. We haven't actually sat down and said, what is it we want them to do with our money? So I think somewhere at a work session we ought to spend 15 or 20 minutes as collectively, and maybe that would be part of the discussion. Jomo should come and listen and be part of that. But, I mean, we haven't told you what we want you to do when you go there, so thanks a lot, guys. Send me out like a sacrificial lamb here. But I think that, you know, I'd like to see us spend 15 or 20 minutes and at least kind of get some collective thoughts about what we want them to do and what we think Crystal should be recommending to them for us.
You know, that's a good idea, and I'd say about once every 4 to 8 weeks, Crystal, myself, and Jomo get together and go over what FEDCO is doing and directions and working with different aspects and different thoughts. But, you know, when you give them a – when the city council budgets a significant amount of money, you should be able to sit down with them, too, and get that information firsthand. We'll do that. We'll do that.
I think it's time we gave them direction. Here's what we'd like you to do with our money.
Or where are you at? What are you doing? Okay, have you thought about this? Why don't you try this? You know, they're in the business not to be an economic reporting company. They're in the business to be an economic development company.
That's right.
So,
may I add something?
Yes.
Our opportunity to give them those comments is how we word those grant applications. They should state what we expect. So we need to go back to our own applications and say, this is our communication to the groups that we ask to request funds for. We should be stating very clearly what in there, what the exchange is. So that's probably another big job for Mr. Marty.
Okay. Is there any other discussion on Resolution 5116 or a rabbit hole we want to go down? Okay. We're going to go to Ordinance 6278, an ordinance amending the collective bargaining agreement between the City of Fairbanks and International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBW 1547, by addressing non-union position acting pay. Advance to the second reading. We've been through this. Chief of Staff, you want to bring us through it?
Certainly. This is just so that IBW members can be compensated for covering up a higher level. For like example, you know, Margarita's gone today. If the controller or grants administrator were filling in as the CFO, currently they would not be compensated for that. But any other department head that was gone from IBW and one of their members was acting as a department head, they would be compensated for it. So we're just trying to make it fair across the board. It really only affects a few positions. Margarita's position, the human resources director, risk management, and myself. So when IBW members are filling in for us, they don't get compensated for it, and we're just trying to make it fair.
Who's filling in for Margarita today?
I am today.
So we look at budgetary items, too.
And that's typically how we try to do it. You know, Margarita and I try to fill in for each other. But if it was a finance heavy week, it would be much better to have the controller doing that than me.
Mr. Clayworth.
Okay, hypothetical here, so I can understand this. Well, let's take the clerk's office. If Danny is gone for over 12 hours, which would be a day and a half, then is this automatic?
If Danny's gone, then Colt, who is also not an IBW member, would be filling in for her, so it doesn't apply.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Give me a...
Literally, the only people that... the only positions that it affects are chief of staff, chief financial officer, human resources director, and the risk manager. Let's say that Margarita and I are both gone. AML is a good example. Margarita and I are both... in theory, if the mayor makes me go, we'll both be gone for that week for AML. During that time, maybe Katie's acting as a controller or the controller is acting as the CFO. So the controller would then be getting paid the additional 10%. That's the only time that this sort of thing would come into effect.
But is that automatic again? I mean, if you're at AML and available by phone or whatever.
No, it's not automatic. It has to be appointed by, be an appointment. AML is, I guess, not a great example. When Margarita or I go on vacation, and we're going to be out of the country, and we can't access, like if we're on a cruise where we don't have internet access, like that'd be a time when this could kick in.
Okay, so it's not automatic. It would be at the request of that individual who's gone.
Right, through the mayor. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense to me, but that's not quite what it says here, and that's my only concern. I just don't know if we're setting ourselves up for a grievance.
Mr. Clayworth, if you might want to make a few changes that we can look at on next Monday, give it to me prior.
Well, it has to be negotiated.
And that's been in there for... forever with IBW contract, that 12-hour thing, and it's never been a problem in the past.
Yeah. Well, it does concern me that the word will be appointed. You know, somebody thought it necessary to change a may to a will and that sort of thing. But I don't know. Having dealt with grievances in the past myself, anything you can do to mitigate them is smart.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. We've had any IBW grievances and... I can't remember the last one. I don't know if we've had any since I've been chief of staff, to be honest. It's pretty rare.
Yeah. So in your mind, you think this is real clear?
I think it's fine. I mean, that language, other than the will and shall, which was a change on our that we asked for, like, I don't think there's any issue.
Any other discussion? We're going to go to item number 4, resolution 5118, a resolution awarding a contract to Johnson River Enterprises LLC in the amount of $266,843 for child restrooms renovation at City Hall. And we'll be introducing this on Monday. Chief Staff, you want to bring us through this?
This is the never-ending project. It's
your never-ending project.
Yeah, this is a good sign. We'll get Johnson River down there, and they're going to, you know, start working on the restrooms. And my understanding is the abatement is basically done, and it's just time to start putting everything back together.
Any questions on this, Ms. Clayworth?
I was just going to say they're a good company.
You have your mic on, sir, still. Mr. Marnie.
So where are we sitting total on this, you know, this project, besides this?
As far as how much we spent on it?
Yeah.
Out of the $500,000, once this is done, I think we'll have $85,000, $90,000 left.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Ringstead.
Yes, sir.
We've spent a chunk of that getting it torn
abated
and, yeah, squared away. Now we're
spent a 260 to put it back together.
Yes, sir.
So this is already allocated funds.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, it was allocated last year.
Mr. Ringstead, you might have not have went to the school, but those of us who did show no ill effects of those items that were built in the school.
Yeah.
I know. Any other questions?
Get lost.
Okay. We'll go on to item five on our agenda, resolution 5119, a resolution to support the Fairbanks North Star Borough Downtown Plan, Downtown Fairbanks 2040, conditioned upon recommended changes. And you have a insert, I guess we'd call it. And we made this conditional. If you look at the first, now therefore be it resolved that the City of Fairbanks Council, Fairbanks City Council rather, supports the adoption of Downtown Fairbanks 2040 plan as an element of Fairbanks or Starborough's regional comprehensive plan, conditioned upon the inclusion of the City Council's recommended changes as outlined in Attachment A to this resolution. Now, I added some other whereases over here. And what I did was I said that we, the City Council, went through this on the second page, first whereas. Second whereas where we have these recommended concurrence with all the members. Every member here concurred with these changes. And anyway, I thought it was very important. And again, take a look at this. We're in no hurry. If we want to do rewrites to this, we can do that during our meeting or adjust it and come back with it. Any questions? Okay. We're going to move on to resolution 5120. A resolution authorizing the City of Fairbanks to apply for funds from the United States Department of Justice of Community-Oriented Policing Services, acronym of COPS, for fiscal year 2024, promoting Access Crisis Team Community Policing Development Program. Any questions on this? Mr. Ringstead?
What do our folks do with this money?
Why doesn't Brenda come up here and explain that? Because she is one of my bosses in this building. And happy week after your birthday, Brenda. I was looking for you all last week, but you were busy traveling.
I think Bryn found me. Balloons. So this money is available to really start or expand a CIT program in a police department. And since I've been here, and I think, you know, multiple years before, they've wanted to do CIT training, but they haven't been able to. And I think it's, you know, people in the leadership positions are very busy, and so we could use this money to actually contract someone to come in and get that going. There's a lot of legwork with it where you work with all the nonprofits and with NAMI to really set up your entire curriculum and then run that program. So that's the first part, is hire someone that they do that full-time and as a contract. And then the second part, pay to have the Alaska Native content experts come in for that part of the training, so pay them for that portion. There's organizations like Tanana Chiefs Conference or Dinakanaga under Tanana Chief Conference where you can pay to have elders come in and talk about their stories and their history to the officers. And then the third part, seeing if we can get a peer that can work with the police department, with the community paramedic, with the mobile crisis team, and really try to explore if we can bill for that through Medicaid with the expertise of Chief Cacaro as well. But if that can be a sustainable service where we can have embedded peers that can be walking alongside people. So I think of people that I met at the mission who maybe had their vehicle stolen and then it's impounded and they're dealing with so much, you know, physical, mental health issues. There's no way that they can like get through the paperwork that the police might need them to fill out, show up to dates, and that peer really walking alongside them. And so usually in lieu of doing those things you need to do, they might just come into the lobby and like scream at the person possibly, or be nice to the person, but just want to take hours of their time in the lobby without being able to do the productive things they need to do. So long answer, but those three things is what we would hope. It's for 2 years, $400,000 total, so it's not a ton of money. 10 awards across the entire United States. So we're trying to make a you know, a diverse application to stand out. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Any other questions? Mr. Marney.
So there's no cost to the city on this program.
There's no matching. There's no cost.
And then what about other races besides the indigenous people? What were we just singling out one?
So when I took CIT, you're always talking about cultural differences, and you actually talk a lot about developmental disabilities, and it's primarily mental health. When I taught Crisis Prevention Institute to the police department, you know, we have some lateral officers now, and then just, you know, it's mostly a Caucasian workforce, and they were fascinated by anything we could bring in about Alaska Native forms of communication, anything about history, anything about trauma. And, you know, when I did the ride-along, a large percentage of the people that you're interacting with overnight are Alaska Native. So I think it's needed. I think it's really important. Certainly, you know, talk about cultural differences of everyone, but I think there should be a special unit on this if they're going to be policing in Fairbanks.
Mr. Ringstead.
More of a technical perspective. We talk in here a couple places about Native Alaskan. Several of us are Native Alaskans, but we're not Alaskan Natives.
Yeah, we need to switch that. Yeah. I saw that mistake. It should be Alaskan Native. Right?
Yes.
Talking about describing Alaska Natives, I think when we use one broad term for Alaska Natives, we run the risk of being outsiders to the discussion because we have several major groups in our state that are not part of the region of their own cultural definition. And, if we have persons above the Brooks Range or down to the Aleutians with the Aleuts and the various different descriptions of persons who are part of a major group of Alaska Natives. But to lump them all together in one is inaccurate and doesn't always work and makes a lot of assumptions. And just the other day, someone was making a comment about me particularly. And because I was born in Fairbanks and because I'm part of the interior, it's kind of assumed that I'm part of the interior grouping of persons on the rivers and so on and so forth. And then I think, no, that's not my heritage. And so we need to be really careful that we just don't lump everybody into a singular statement of who we are. So if we're going to try and know each other, then we have to know each other. And my family comes from a lot farther north.
Over the hill.
What's that?
Not that you're over the hill. We're not saying that.
No, okay.
Just someplace else. Over the mountains. There you go.
Yeah.
Other than switching the two words around, Native Alaskan to Alaska Native, is there any other discussion on this?
No, okay. It's the same thing in the fiscal note, though.
Yep. Madam Clerk, could you remember that on there? Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda.
Yep. Thank you very much, Brenda. Happy week after your birthday. Okay, Ordinance 6279, an ordinance amending the Fairbanks General Code Section 22-28B to create parity between city and borough election worker pay. So this will be a first reading. It's from Sue Sprinkle, who's working right now at the elections. Okay. It's, you know, Municipal Clerks Week. Let's let the clerk talk about this. Give her a voice, Jerry. Oh. Madam Clerk.
Mr. Cleworth wants the floor, please. Do you have questions?
It's the struck out part, the hourly rate provided for similar election officials for state elections. Is there a disparity there, apparently?
Yeah, so the borough has... the borough and the state don't pay the same wages, so the city and the state then do not pay the same wages. So this is kind of, we pay the same as the borough because we share their election. We share their election workers, so we can't pay that same person a city wage for half the day and a borough wage for half the day. It really doesn't make any sense. It makes more sense for the borough and the city's pay to be the same versus the cities and the states to be the same, because we don't share election workers with the state. The borough has upped its election worker pay a little bit, and I think it's a little higher than the state. Right now, the borough's paying, as of last year, regular election, $20 an hour for a regular election worker and $21 an hour for an election worker chair.
Borough's rate, not the state's rate.
In practice, that's what we're doing just because of how it's...
So we're just cleaning up our language
to
make it match what we're already doing.
That is correct.
And not enough money to really matter.
Ms. Rogers? No? Ms. Cleaver?
No, I'm...
Okay. Ms. Tidwell, you've been very vocal today. Nope. Okay. We're going to go on to Ordinance 6280, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code, Chapter 14, Article 13, business licensing to allow for youth business license and amending the city schedule fees or charges for services. It'll be at a first reading on Monday. Mr. Sanders, you want to bring us through this?
Certainly. So this is something that... Danny and I have been talking about for a long time, and it actually involves FEDCO. I know you guys had mentioned them earlier today. One of the things that we're looking to do is to create a $1 business license for kiddos so that they can, do lemonade stands and all the typical stuff that young entrepreneurs want to do. And then FEDC is involved is Killian, one of their project managers, is setting up a. They already have a youth entrepreneur program, but with this, it'd be an even younger demographic that they're trying to reach, and then we would let them get this $1 business license. And then we would give them a bunch of city swag and all that stuff as well. But then also give them the classes from FEDC. And then we also talked to Julie from Festival Fairbanks about potentially having a day at Golden Heart Plaza where if we get this through, where all the young entrepreneurs could set up in Golden Heart Plaza for a day and make an event out of it.
You know, it's interesting here. A friend of mine, he has frozen smoke barbecue. He has a business in Lat 65. It's food, so I'm over there a lot. But what he's doing is he's taking his food truck and he's making it available for a 2024 youth food summer food trailer job. He's looking for people between 14 and 17 years old. You know, get their parents... no permission or anything like that. But that's where he's starting. He's looking at a youth program to employ teenagers to be in the food business, you know, accounting, food production, everything like that. And so eventually I got a feeling he's going to be looking at a year or two, someone of that age leasing this from him, just, you know, the next extension. And this sort of fills that hole for us. And this was brought by Mr. Sanders, and it works. It fills holes.
I believe it was originally Danny's idea. Yeah.
Now I'm just going to ask the basic question here. Which person here didn't work for their parents as a kid? Exactly. Exactly. I didn't say you were recompensed. You know, when I brought it up to my dad, you know, I was 14 years old, every morning at 5:30, and he goes, David, when you work for your parents, there are no child labor laws. And he was correct. So anyway, Mr. Cleworth.
I guess I'd make one recommendation here. I don't see the point of going through all the rigmarole of charging a buck. I would say the addition of D, it says any youth under the age 18 who does business on a seasonal and temporary basis in the city, that's added to our list of exemptions, and just eliminate all the other part of it. Is it imperative that we make them come over to the city and pay a dollar to get a seasonal business license? That doesn't make sense to me.
License and learn how to do that and just not really charge them the fee?
Not really.
You don't want them to have to come do it at all.
No.
Miss Rogers,
the other to me.
I guess I disagree. If we're talking about lessons and life lessons and whatnot, that dollar represents their passageway into another realm of activity and understanding and responsibility. And I don't see that as a waste of anyone's time or effort. So
I also view this, as Ms. Rogers does, as a learning experience. Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a lesson in bureaucracy. But I'll try and make a change.
Yeah, but they need to learn that one, fortunately.
Anyway.
I agree with you.
And I look back, to things always, of course, that's part of getting on in years, all this other stuff that impacts what you're thinking about. But we're talking about youth, and you bring up Festival Fairbanks and everything, and way back when we had the young girl with the wagon and selling things down in there. And to me, I still think that's a shameful thing that happened in our community, where this was put the big old squash on that and shut it down, and everything else was all on the front pages of the newspaper. What a learning experience for the rest of our young people to not make the effort to go ahead and be gregarious and create their own resources. And
now before Mr. Cleworth chimes in, I want to counter that. My goddaughter, her son, an umpteenth millionth generation Alaskan, I got Mr. Cleworth's permission to have him sell lemonade in front of Mr. Cleworth's store one time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no issues. Mr. Cleworth ran a very tight area there.
I mean, folks, in my cul-de-sac, we have little kids with their lemonade stands. My guess is that they have never bought a business license at the city of Fairbanks, and nor do I want them to. That's kind of absurd, but technically they have to do it. I say let's just exempt them and call it a day, and that's the great American capitalism at work. It's that lemonade stand with a child.
We're not trying to crush little kids. We're just trying to do something nice for them. I mean, I knew it would be a stretch. That's all we're trying to do, is just trying to be nice to them. We're not trying to, go after kids for not having a business license or anything like that.
Well, we can be nicer to them if they don't take a buck from them.
And, on my side of the equation, now I can not hire illegally a 14-year-old to mow my lawn for 30 bucks, get a business license, and here's your dollar. Just a thought.
Mayor.
Yes, okay. our clerk of the year.
We do get every summer usually just a couple of kids that come into the office and get a business license because their parents are trying to teach them that this is what you do when you run a real business. This was just an idea that, you know, we thought they could get away with a lot less money for a business license. It would, you know, something they paid for with their own money, a dollar. I think it's a feel-good thing. It's not necessary. It's not required. There's no penalty for these kids. Basically, they're exempt from all the rules by that first subsection D on the second page. That exempts them from all the penalties and the requirements. So this is completely and because I want to or because my parents want me to kind of thing. It's not a – there's no – definitely no requirement for this.
Mr. Ringstead, how many lawns did you mow as a kid without a license? You know the statute of limitations has expired.
Oh, good. I mean, is it a way to put an optional license? Like, I mean, if it's a good training thing for the if parents want to bring them down, and they're probably not coming on their own, but to bring them down and say, okay, here's how the process goes. But if we don't say something else, then we're technically making them a violation, right?
So we,
well, that's what I'm saying. Is there a way to maybe we could make it as an optional license?
I think that the word may in 1605, the first sentence under 605, sorry, may obtain. I think if attorney Char, does that make it optional? Or is it, what do you...
We can insert verbiage in there to make this so it's clearly optional.
Okay.
Well, to get a little certificate and everything like that.
Yeah.
Mr. Charn? Okay. You know, we're trying to be open, friendly, nice, and yeah, and that way, you know, those people who also shovel my driveway in the winter and they're 14 years old, they feel good about it too. Those are jobs we all did as kids. Anyway, we're teenagers. Any other discussion on this? Certainly.
Adds another layer of things, but we could very well, if we're talking about learning experiences here, have a committee of persons who are from this application process, get together and give their thoughts, their ideas about their experiences, and who knows what. But anyway, I'd be willing to help with that.
And just so everyone knows, I'm looking at in my office getting a student, worker, non-paid, and we're talking about that, an intern. You know, someone in high school, and just works out of the office and has a, it's not going to be someone who makes copies of stuff. No, this person's going to learn the city of Fairbanks and do it on a semester basis. So we're looking at doing that. It's one of the ideas that came up from the chief of staff and a few other people and thought it was a good idea. They won't need a business license on that. Mr. Ringstead.
Think about tying that into credit programs or something for kids in their government class, high school kids.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Let them get out of the textbook and learn about government, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on to, well, let's get the fire chief up here right now. And this is an unnumbered ordinance, and it's quite long and thick. We've talked about allowing private services to come in and perform ambulance items. Chief of Staff, you want to bring us into how this started?
Certainly. So this is something that that the chief had brought up last year when some of the different companies, private ambulance companies were looking to come into town. And then it was it didn't go anywhere last year. And then we were reached LifeMed reached out to us and basically said that they wanted us to have an ordinance and that they were expecting us to have an ordinance like similar to the one that, that Anchorage has. They don't feel comfortable you know doing the business unless we have some sort of ordinance. So basically, if we want to have any you know legitimate private ambulance companies in town, we should probably look at this again. I mean, this was from the folks from LifeMed. They stopped and they talked to the mayor to me. They went over to the hospital. They're talking to the folks at the hospital. They're asking for this. It's not like we're going out and imposing this on anybody. They're asking us to have this.
Yes, Mr. Ring said that Mr. Marnie.
We kind of dropped this thing and hadn't heard from anybody.
Yeah, here's the original ordinance here.
So what, I mean, now they've read through it, they're happy with the direction this is going, or what's changed? None of us, I don't know if any of us have heard from anybody.
They were, so every year, every summer that I've been the chief of staff, we get the ambulance companies coming into town, and they talk about you know they're gonna do something. LifeMed is probably the only ones that I think would actually you know do it because they've consistent over the last 3 years they've been like yeah we're gonna get started. I think that they probably will. It makes sense for them. But yeah, they're asking for us to have an ordinance. I know that they suggested the one like Anchorage, which is the same one that Chief Caccaro had suggested before.
They about 2 years ago they built a exceptional facility out at the airport that they staff with. They have on-site housing for their nurses, their pilots, and they average about you know 1 to 2 flights out of here a day. So they're looking for, okay, we have this ambulance sitting there 24/7, 365. What else can we do with it? And we already go from the hospital, from our facility to the hospital and out to the airport. So they came to us unsolicited and talked about providing a service to the hospital. And our thought was, well, if you can provide a service, you're going to provide it all. You're not going to get the cream and have us do the bad ones. You're going to take it all, it's all or nothing. But it's going to be contingent upon the hospital. They're the service provider for you. What do they want to do? Do they want the city of Fairbanks to continue it or you? So this is a continuation of that. If it's ever to happen, this is the ordinance that crafts it, quantifies it, and qualifies it. Mr. Clayworth.
Chief, to become a paramedic, you have to be licensed by the state of Alaska, right?
That's correct.
And same with advanced EMT?
Yes, all EMS certificates come through the state of Alaska, Department of Public Health. They also have some stipulations, like for a paramedic, National Registry is your initial pathway to get to that license level, but everything is regulated by the state of Alaska as far as minimum requirements.
So they're technically regulated by the state of Alaska. If you are a paramedic, let's say there's a complaint. You know, you've got a paramedic in the borough or advanced EMT, and something goes wrong or whatever. Is that something that the state would investigate?
So it depends on the infraction. The state statutes and their admin code break down every other level of EMT and paramedic differently. Usually the first step is a local review that's handled by the department and their local medical director because the medical director is ultimately responsible for that provider's actions under his or her license as a doctor. And then if there's any state-level action that needs to be taken, then the state can elect to investigate and take action against that provider's license moving forward. So it really is an individual basis. The state regulates, like I said, a minimum standard of education, but they don't manage the day-to-day what a paramedic or EMT should or shouldn't do, what an ambulance should or shouldn't have on it. And that's because of the vast differences in EMS systems across the state, that there is no cookie cutter approach like a lot of states in the lower 48 have a lot of similarities throughout their entire region. Here we have, you know, literally villages with, you know, very little resources, and then we have metropolitan cities like Anchorage that have obviously lots of resources. So the state, on purpose, and I think rightfully so, levels this back down to the local levels because they know what's best for their area versus somebody not from this area that doesn't know what the provider level should be, could be, or what the local citizens need for their ambulance service.
The borough service areas have their own ambulance. Some of them do. And they operate within the city limits themselves. My guess is that they're exempt from this.
So they don't operate inside of the city limits outside of any mutual aid agreements, which are pretty slim and few and far between for ambulance calls now. We, back in the day, burned our mutual aid partnership out with multiple stack calls that they were coming to, so the other chiefs and the borough have decided to pull those resources back to their communities and keep them there. They operate as in they drive and transport people to FMH, which is within the city. But once they drop off, they're going back to their respective districts almost immediately. So they're exempt for 911 calls, but since none of them do non-emergency work like the private companies do, it doesn't necessarily fall into that purview for them because they just don't do this business part of it.
They also responded to emergency calls if we needed to, if we were backed up, right?
Very few calls will they back us up on anymore just because of our high level of calls, which goes back to the third ambulance discussion, which goes back to the multiple stack calls for 30, 40 minutes, an hour, whatever they were before Medic 3 got staffed. They're just not coming. They just don't have the resources.
But they have done that in the past.
Yes, in the past.
We have a very large emergency. We require a lot of vehicles.
Yes, the mutual aid agreement is there. If they respond or not is at a department level to their either battalion chief or their chief officer.
What I would suggest everyone to do is read through this at your convenience. Again, we're in no hurry on this. And then meet with the chief with any discussion. You know, he's operated a private service before. And on our side of the equation, we're going to see if the hospital even wants to do this. And if they want to do this and you've had good discussion with the chief, then we can have a work session on this and have a more in-depth conversation on every aspect of this. Again, we're in no hurry. This is not an ordinance that introduced, has no ordinance number. And it's quite voluminous in what it says. So, any other questions before we move on? Yes, Mr. Marnie.
So it looks like it's verbatim what we attempted to do last September.
This is exactly the same document that I brought last year, like Mike said. My prior lives have told me that this is what companies expect to see, and they're kind of shocked. I think, like I said last year, that we didn't have it. I thought it was kind of interesting when they started talking to Mike and the city again. They're like, hey, where's the ordinance? Like, we want to make sure we're following your rule set appropriately. And not having it, I think, is you know, something that we need to look at as a group. And if we put this on the books and we never actually use it, then it's fine and it's great and everything's happy. And if we have companies and express interest and they go through the few steps and processes, which they do every day in every other area they work in, and then they're official, they have a rule book, and everybody needs to have a rule book when they're playing the game, right?
Yeah.
And they expect that, just like employees expect to have structure and rules and regulations. We expect the people who are going to take care of our citizens to follow rules and regulations to what we expect for our service level. So it's a lot of pages and a lot of words just to get us to a point of saying that you've met a minimum level of service. And, you know, if you choose to do business inside of the city, this is just like the business license concept, right? We're just getting you a process to get to that point. So they've asked for it. They're looking for it. They've already done almost, I mean, it's the same document in Anchorage, basically. with a few words change, obviously, because putting, you know, Anchorage and not having Fairbanks in there wouldn't make sense. But, you know, they follow these exact rules other places, and they're used to it. This is common practice in the private ambulance industry. Having franchise agreements and ambulance ordinances are everywhere. I mean, it's not a Fairbanks only thing. There are hundreds of communities out there, thousands of communities out there that have these same exact rule sets.
Thank you, Chief. Ms. Tidwell.
When we had this up last time, didn't we invite those companies to come and have a conversation? Isn't that one of the reasons why it went nowhere? Because we never heard anything from them?
Right. So I think, like Mike said, this is part of a business model, and I'm sure that somewhere in these organizations they have somebody charged with expanding their company, right? Just like most companies do. They're looking for opportunities to find new revenue streams, especially in an industry where revenue is hard to come by. So them reaching out periodically makes sense as a business model. And then, you know, they're trying to make sure, you know, what can we do, what we can't do, what's sustainable, what's not sustainable, what's going to be profitable and what's not. So reaching out and looking for this guidance will give them the ability to say, here's the Fairbanks framework. Here's what kind of potential revenue we're looking at. Do we want to jump into this market or not? And not having this rule book doesn't help that private company feel more secure, because now they're not playing on an even playing field, right? Then you're going to start getting into bidding wars and weird things that are going to happen. And yeah, we don't have 50,000 private ambulance companies like I came from on the East Coast, but knowing that the other companies are holding that same standard, make sure that you're playing on a level playing field on their side of the house. And I don't think I did a good job of explaining that last year, but you know, if my operating costs are X, and I'm trying to keep my expenses down, then I need to make sure that the other company can't cut me out by not stocking the ambulance, by having non-certified people, by, you know, not having this, you know, ordinance paid for, you know, the license from it or whatever it is. So it gives them security knowing that we're going to hold other companies to a standard. And I think that's the interesting point of their last reach out was, you know, we're looking into this, but we're not comfortable without having some kind of framework to follow. So that's a big piece of the pie, and places that I avoided as a private company, you know, if I wasn't getting that even shake with the other companies, I didn't really want to compete in that market necessarily.
Any other questions for the chief? Mr. Cleworth.
When you say uncertified individuals, what do you mean?
So I'm not saying any local company. I don't know their people or personnel at all. But I've seen other areas where they've had, you know, rules in place, and well, I had an EMT, but you know, today Bob called out sick, so I had Bob Jr. fill in, and he's a farmer and he's not an EMT, but he's got a driver's license, and that's good. So having those kind of rule sets in place are important locally, because state office of EMS divisions are usually too busy to regulate that granularly. Did that come out right? Came out a little sideways, but it came out. Where locally, we have a lot more ability to make sure that, you know, their rosters are complete, that the hospital ramp checks can get done if those are, you know, needed in the future. And we can handle local complaints much easier than a complaint goes to the state and it sits there for 8 months while the other company continues to break rules. There's always a time and a process where locally they can say, hey, company A isn't following rule X. Can you go look into it? And then locally we have the ability to level that playing field. I'm not saying they would. I don't think most people in this industry do things like that, but it's a reality in some areas that companies don't always play by the rules, and state level offices usually don't have the resources to investigate those things, at least quickly.
Yeah. I'm very hesitant on stuff like this. I mean, to me, it's overreach on our part. We as a city exist to do what the private sector cannot do and provide services that they cannot economically do. If it's regulating an ambulance or any other business in this town, I do it with great caution. That concerns me. So I hope you take a good look at it. I talked to the folks at LifeMed. Because we never had a work session, and what I heard was somewhat different than what I'm hearing today, but I'll talk to them again and see. But I don't want them to use us as a way to also limit their competition. That's not our role here. So I think we need to do our homework on it. So thank you.
Thank you. Welcome back, Mr. Rogers. I meant to say that earlier. It's good to see you back in council.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the Finance Committee report. Ms. Bell is not here, so our chief of staff, Mr. Sanders, will be giving her report.
All right, so the Finance Committee met on April 25th. Mr. Church was excused. Everybody else was present. The bulk of that meeting was to go over the capital fund and to help draft a policy for that. And Margarita's plan is to have that to the City Council by June 30th. Another big project that we started looking at was blighted properties. Ms. Sprinkle gave a pretty interesting presentation about what she calls zombie properties. And then Margarita had found what the state of Iowa was doing for encouraging revitalization and going after blighted properties. And it was really interesting. So I'm originally from Iowa, so I remember when I was a kid seeing all the, you know, the blighted properties and the old, just, you know, run down, you know, properties. And then when I was back for my son's wedding last summer, I noticed that things were a little bit different, but I didn't, you know, think to look into it. But Margarita found that they, over the last couple of years, have really been hitting hard with a statewide revitalization program that addresses blighted properties. So we started looking at that, see if any of it we could do locally. A lot of it we can't because of the way the state has structured our community development block grant. We're not allowed to use it for housing, even though that's what it's intended for at the federal level. So we looked at that. And then we're also, with the Finance Committee, we're also looking at the long-range financial projections. And that's pretty much it. The next meeting is May 23rd, and it'll be in the Felix Pater Room at 7 a.m.
Questions for the CFO through the Chief of Staff? Seeing none? Okay. Next, we're under Mayor and City and council member comments. We'll start with Ms. Rogers.
Looking quite a bit already.
Mr. Cleworth.
I'm good.
Ms. Tidwell. Mr. Marnie.
Well, we can't go that far.
Yes, you're a cleanup hitter.
There you go. I never liked that position. So we had some discussion about, I think, when our DA was in about a theft task force, and I'm continually having a discussion with different people working in some of our retail establishments in town, pointing out their problems, and it was interesting. I was at Walmart last week, and as I'm walking by there, and I was told this, they've shut down some of their self-checkout counters because too many people are checking out two items and walking out with a cart full. And they're trying to now having to hire security to watch people going out the door. And as I walked in looking at this, there was a gentleman with his phone videotaping a guy walking out with a cart. And he's walking along with this guy videoing the whole thing as this guy's headed toward the door. And about halfway out there, I hear him say, "Are you going to pay for those?" And the guy with the car just ignored him and kept right on walking. And so we videoed him all the way out the door. Talking with someone at Safeway, she said, "Well, you know, they talk to these people, they say something to these people, but you know, she said, I can't get in a fight with them, you know. So what do we do?" So they're taking pictures. So they have pictures and faces that I'm assuming that they're going to bring to our police department, right? But I think that the issue is there, and our businesses are having problems with that, and we're going to have to deal with it. If nothing else, the businesses are going to start bringing it to our police department. So we need to be supportive of whatever this task force is hopefully going to try and do something with it. So
within a month, I'll have Captain Warner, probably in June, give an update to in a city council meeting on where they're at with that. And it was his idea, his creation. very talented individual. Yeah. Okay. I guess I'm last, and I will finish off by saying, Danny, you're incredible. It's a great resolution for you to have to sign yourself. And everyone have a good week.